Score, the podcast. The only show taking you inside the studios of the world's most celebrated composers and musicians.
I'm Kenny Holmes. That is Matt Schrader. On my right or left, I don't know what box you're in. The screen
is. If you're in audio, I'm coming through both ears right now.
There you go. Audio, both speakers, video, you're on one side of me or the other. This is Score the Podcast, another episode. Very excited to be back with you. A reminder to you guys, we joined TikTok, so if you want to watch some clips of our show and some funny moments and some past iconic moments from the show, you can go find us at Score the Podcast.
Georgia is reminded that Giorgio Moroder Daft Punk story clip is just blowing up on there.
Again. Everywhere. That story, people just can't believe it. The three microphones thing. It's pretty awesome to see, and the instant follow and share of TikTok, it just goes so fast. It's crazy. But yeah, go follow us on there, please, if you're listening. And we got another great episode for you today. The show on Netflix, The Gentleman, has been crushing it. He's the composer for Guy Ritchie. Chris Benstead is going to be joining us from London.
And his new movie, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Yes.
We talked with him a little bit about the word gentleman in several of the titles of his films and TV shows. But really starting to find his kind of musical home, I think, with Guy Ritchie and, you know, a director who very much an auteur, has his own flavor, has his own perspective. His films are, you know, they have a certain kind of action-y, you know, comedic kind of tone that a lot of people adore. And
it's a bit cheeky.
And Chris Benstead.
Exactly. They like to say.
Yes. And Chris has really just started to dial in on, I think, the last four or five films that he's done with Guy. And now this TV show as well on Netflix. I would be surprised if that doesn't come back for a season two after doing so well.
Yeah.
But really interesting background coming from the kind of, you know, sound world and some music mixing and, you know,
yeah,
some,
supervising
some early
music stuff editor, orchestrator, arranger, re-recording mixer, and composer. So it'll be interesting when you guys hear our interview to hear about how valuable all of those skill sets are, as opposed to just being a composer and passing it
yes.
all out. Like he knows what those people are going through when he's done with the music, so he's able to utilize his knowledge to maybe help the team out a little bit more.
And I don't think we've interviewed someone with this many, you know, specialties that he's come up in such a broad range of things. You know, under prior experience, he'll just say yes. He does everything.
Yeah. So let's get to it. Our interview with Chris Benstead, the composer of The Gentleman, among many other things with Guy Ritchie.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
All right. Well, we are excited to have the composer of one of the hottest series out right now, Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman on Netflix. He's also worked on numerous other Guy Ritchie projects, including their new movie, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare projects.
Pretty much everything
and,
with gentleman, I think, in the title in the last
yeah.
few years.
big gentleman guy.
Yeah, exactly.
He's also worn so many other hats. If you're a credit studier at the end of films, you've probably seen our guest's name dozens, if not hundreds of times in films, from music editing to sound mixing. Oh, by the way, he won an Oscar for that as well with Gravity. Please welcome Chris Benstead to the show.
Hey.
Hello, chaps.
What's up, Chris?
How are we doing?
Great to meet you. Great to connect.
Yeah.
This is
Yeah, you too.
We've
you
been
too.
Seeing your name pop up on things more and more, and some of these, The Gentleman on Netflix is such a fun musical show, especially, you know, early. There's such an epic feel to that. And I have recommended that to several people because it's just such a fun series. People always say, is that related to the movie, which you also did, but it's not. It's
yes.
Or I mean, very loosely maybe, but it's all new kind of characters and storylines and drama and man, it's fun. I mean, it sucks you right in from the very get go. But I know that was the first TV series that you that Guy had done. Can you tell me about kind of jumping into that and what that project was like? Because you've now done, I think at that point, what, four of his films, something like that? I know you have another one coming up.
Yeah, something on those lines. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think I'm on my 8th or 9th project with him now somehow. Okay. Somehow things have gone fast.
Wow.
But it was interesting to go to the sort of episodic TV thing after doing several films with him. And I don't know how, but we sort of nailed the tone of it pretty quickly, actually. Sometimes I always say sort of scoring a film, you have to kind of like unlock a secret recipe to the film. You know, you can't just, that's how I see it anyway. You know, so you can sometimes write an entire score and think, actually, this could be better, and then revise it, right? Which is quite good fun at times. But The Gentleman, yeah, we kind of nailed that sort of idea of the over-the-top, semi-ecclesiastical, operatic thing.
Yeah.
For this, you know, to play inside sort of Freddie's head as this whole situation blows up, kind of thing. And then there was, and from that we sort of extrapolated other sort of classical flavors and twists. So it's kind of more orchestral than the other stuff I've done with Guy, which was really good fun. It was really nice, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But then it's just, and then kind of shaping it to his, because even though it's sort of in that world, Guy loves rhythmic propulsion is his key thing. He really doesn't like kind of static chordal music, which you'll find in a lot of film and TV, right? So everything tends to be kind of rhythmically driven, which you may have noticed.
And yeah, tell me how that overlapped with the film that's coming, as we're speaking here, is coming out very shortly. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Am I getting that correct?
That's right. Yeah. As you pointed out, yeah, anything with the word gent in it, he seems to have a penchant for. I was kind of doing both at the same time, which was fun. But it was really nice to have such a different palette on both films. So Ministry is very different. It's not as kind of orchestral at all. It's much more of a, I don't know how to describe it really. It's kind of more along the sort of lines of a Western, actually, to some extent. So that'd be
fun.
Quite interesting for Guy fans.
When you're doing that, do you do one day on this, one day on that? Are you able to sort of, is your brain able to work on two different projects in the same day? And do you need time in between? Like, how does that juggle work for you in your process?
Yeah, not it sort of worked out that I tended to do more kind of swathes on each, as it were. It just kind of worked out like that. But sometimes I was doing, juggling a few things at once. Because the Netflix show, it was in post for quite a while, so it did let me be a bit choosy about when I could just dip into that. But yeah, I found it awesome, actually, to have the two things going, because especially The Gentleman music was so lavish. That was really cool, because in film I'm sort of generalizing here, but the sort of need for tension, I don't know, seems to be more prevalent. So I don't know, it was fun.
What is the, you have such an interesting career path, and this is something that has, is very unusual among composers that we usually talk to. But I'm really curious about your journey from it seems like kind of the sound world is where everything began, but you may correct me and say, I've always been doing music. It just wasn't for TV and film and all of that yet. But tell me where this journey kind of started. 'Cause it looks like your career basically started as a supervising sound editor or re-recording mixer, that type of industry. So I'm curious about the origin of that, and then when the switch started to happen and you started to be more involved in the musical side.
Yeah, actually, I've always been on the musical side. So I was a music editor for about, for kind of 15 years.
Yeah.
And then it was actually strange. I sort of then dipped my toe into mixing. That was kind of born out of Gravity, working on Gravity, actually. So, Yeah, so re-recording, mixing kind of went alongside being a music editor and producing music and mixing music for composers and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was just a sort of, I am a sort of musician by trade. I studied music, so that's the path I always wanted to go down. I just took me 15 years to get there.
Yeah.
I've heard David Arnold talk about this too. He says, until you're 40, you know, you'd be lucky to get anything. I think he said that. Well, you know, I think he's hyperbolizing, but I think it's true. So, I kind of bided my time as a music editor, which is a sort of a little known job in film, but essentially, you know, you're working with composers, supporting them, and you know, the overall thing is reworking their music and keeping it in sync with the picture. But also, there's another side to that, which is temping, where we take music from existing music and put that to a film just to give the director a sense of what it'll be like with music. Because often, you know, in the edit, before you've even hired a composer, you need to try some music out, right? Otherwise, you're kind of stabbing in the dark a bit as to who to hire to write score. So yeah, I kind of got good at that, and even I kind of went a bit crazy on that stuff. I'd often, you know, I'd go from a piece of existing music and then loop a few bars and add my own layers and sort of compose around it a little bit. So it was, I hopefully the work I did as a music editor was not as catastrophic as some.
Well, I was wondering,
because
we've heard composers say many times, you know, the picture changed after I recorded with the orchestra, and now the whatever isn't, the timing isn't right, and you know, they had to cut short this, and it sounds terrible and it sounds awful. How many times did you get cussed out by some composer saying that sounds like
yeah what are you doing, man? Like you've
that's
done
not
a,
how it's
a
supposed
5/4
to go.
Bar there, that's ridiculous. Yeah, well, I had this that does happen, but I sort of, some people see it more as sound editing, if you see what I mean. Like, oh, we'll just slop an edit in there and it'll be fine. I tended to view it more as a musician would. You know, this should sound like a piece of music. If, you know, we can probably edit this. We've got 12 stems here. All the instruments are kind of separate. We should be able to do some magic. So I did have a kind of motto of no bad edits. That was what I sort of used to tell myself, because it was easy to have. And that comes with experience, obviously. The more... And it's really useful now, because when I'm conforming or kind of working through a new cut, I can kind of pretty much just sort of do that instinctively, because that's what I knew. But it's knowing where to prioritize a hit point and you know, knowing how music works really is the key to that. And I think, yeah, some people in the game are sort of less musical.
Yes, definitely.
How helpful is it for you as a composer? Do you... Knowing what you went through as a music editor, is there anything you do differently to maybe help the music editor, or does having that skill set that you used to do help you in any way?
Yeah, maybe a team player in some ways. Yeah.
Yeah, it helps me. Yeah, of course. It's massively helpful. I'm probably a bit of a nightmare to music editors, because I will sort of be quite fastidious about edits, yeah. So I'll even sort of grab a session and be like, oh, what about this? Yeah, let's try it this way, kind of thing. Just because I kind of know in my head what I want as soon as I've seen the new cut. So yeah, it was a fun game to be in, and I worked on some, you know, some big old movies over that 15-year period with some amazing directors and composers. Kind of met, you know, most factions of Hollywood music I managed to kind of meet at some point.
Let me read off a couple just for the audience. Kenneth Branagh and Patrick Doyle a couple of times, I think.
A lot with Patrick.
Thor, Patrick Doyle. Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Patrick Doyle, composer. Aladdin, Guy Ritchie directing. Alan Menken, you were working on that project. Beauty and the Beast with Alan Menken. You scored The Gentleman with Guy Ritchie, obviously. No Time to Die, you're listed on with Hans Zimmer. Gravity, Stephen Price, composer. So some, and Alfonso Cuarón is the director.
Yeah.
So many huge ones. I imagine too, as a composer who, you know, you're pushing towards wanting to do that, you're probably soaking up so many tips and tricks and things that some of these great composers are using.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was the greatest kind of apprenticeship, you know, working alongside these people. Especially Patrick Doyle, I worked with him for quite a long while, and we did quite a lot of movies back to back. So I was sort of part of his team. And he's such a great musician. It was just a joy to witness him write music. And I think what that did is it can be quite daunting if someone said, you know, here's logic, write a film score, or, you know what I mean, like, here's a blank page, get on with it kind of thing. But having seen people do that and sit down and write music and then have in their mind how this develops, you know, what the themes are, how we're going to address certain characters or certain situations, it was just so valuable. Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of composers maybe don't get that because they just write their own music, right? As they see fit. Obviously they listen to the music, but I've actually seen the creative process of these people, you know, some in many different ways, shapes and forms. You know, some people are very 9-to-5, some people are up all night, and then you have to be up all night. It just depends.
I'm curious about the process of sort of getting into a musical marriage with some of these composers that are beloved. They have, you know, a very established career in lots of things. Patrick Doyle, of course, one of our favorites. But also when it comes to some of these other projects, working with other composers, what was kind of your introduction to, because I imagine they all kind of have their, I mean, you just mentioned their time, but they also probably have different workflows and the things that are prioritized are different based on what they're trying to achieve. But what was your kind of introduction to working with them? Was that a natural thing, or did someone say, hey, you should check out Chris, he'd be good working with you on this, you know, that kind of a thing? How did that go?
Yeah, it was once I had enough credits as music editor, yeah, it was more on a sort of production basis. So yeah, they're just like, this guy is not crap. As we say, they always do a negative in Britain. So I think just being recommended, just that, you know, that was the key to it. And I'd always just, I think the thing about our industry is it's kind of, I don't know, 51% talent and 49% personality, and being able to kind of get on with a team of people, right? So hopefully manage to make it 1% over the halfway point.
We talked about how you've worked alongside, or, you know, on projects with other composers, but there was kind of a moment there where I'm assuming this is where it happened, but Guy Ritchie directs Aladdin and you work with Alan Menken. Was that your first connection with Guy Ritchie, or how did that connection come together?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So I did Beauty and the Beast with Alan Menken, which was amazing. I love musicals, and I love being on, I was on set a lot and stuff like that. So that was really cool. Which is another thing I've kind of done as well, is kind of arranging for people. So yeah, I met Alan there, and then Aladdin was on the slate, and it was kind of just happened. And I think Alan was quite excited to have me involved in that, because he thought, you know, I'd sort of act as a good conduit between like us, you know, between him and Guy. So that was cool.
And what moved that forward? You got close to Guy in that process, or did Alan say, think of this guy for your next film? Like, how did that?
Yeah, I think I was just cheeky, you know. I kind of ended up doing some additional music on that film, and I think just as it ended, I just kind of, you know, said to Guy, if you need any music on your next film, I'm here. And he went, and he said yes. He said, okay, cool. And that was that, really. And it was, I think there were quite a few, what stood me in good stead for that, there were quite a few tracks in that film as well, some of which I kind of had the stems and I remixed, and I kind of wrote little score linking pieces within them. So that was quite a good bridge for me. And so the score maybe wasn't at the forefront of the project as it was in the TV series. I think you'd agree that the score is kind of the lead voice there. There are some needle drops, but so that was kind of a good way in. It was kind of a halfway in, if you see what I mean. But that was a very dark score tonally, and I think I did say to Guy, should we be doing that on the TV series? And he was like, no, let's do something totally different. It's a different ball game.
Yeah, cool. We're talking about The Gentleman, the film from 2019, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
Of course, you were working on it before then, and then a string of Guy Ritchie films. One of them, it's been quite a run here. The Covenant was last year, so it was Operation Fortune last year. These are all things that are probably a few years earlier than that for you. But can you tell me about working with Guy and like the things that you've picked up? He obviously every composer is reliant on a filmmaker, you know, someone with a vision that they can kind of gel with and find, you know, the creative sweet spots and what the preferences are, but also allow the storytelling to do, you know, to be elevated by the score. You clearly have dialed in, I think, to something that Guy does really well, a lot of action, a little bit of kind of a humor component that really, you know, can kind of give a brief relief, but without breaking the tension, and just that kind of relentless build that still happens. Tell me about working with him and how you spot a picture that he's probably, I assume, already shot and has an early cut of by the time you get to it.
Yeah, actually, I generally come on during the shoot and do some sort of throw some stuff at it at that point, actually, which is quite exciting.
During filming?
So, and I tend to work very closely with his editor, James. And, I mean, Guy is, he knows what he wants when he's got it, if you see what I mean. But sometimes it is a voyage of discovery to get there. And I don't want to say if this is 100% true, but I think, as it's gone on, I've kind of learned his preferences. But sometimes he surprises me as to what he wants, and that can make it quite difficult at times, because I'm like, right, you definitely like this cue, I'm loving it. And then he's like, what is this? Which can be quite difficult. He often, his motto is just, don't be generic. Don't do the obvious. Let's create a little world, which is kind of, I mean, every director asks this of every composer. Of course they do. Let's do something unique and novel and quirky.
They say that at the
fun.
Start.
He likes fun. Yeah, they say that at the start, and then half of it, like, oh, quite, the tempo's quite good there. Yeah. But I think, he does like the music to be fun. He says that word a lot, and he says the word bold a lot, you know, be bold, be bolder, be braver. He tells me to be brave a lot, because often my first draft, I guess it's just kind of what you do. You sort of play it safe because you want it to be successful, right? So you take less risks. But actually, if someone says to you, just do something silly, it's quite good fun, you know, and often better as well.
Is he musical when he says that? Does he know what he means, or does he just want to feel it?
He plays guitar and stuff. I'm pretty sure he's quite musical. Yeah, he's like, he can definitely, he'll sometimes sing melodies and stuff back to me. I don't know if he knows what the solution is to that piece of music. That's kind of more over to me. He's very good. I mean, he's very good at letting you do your thing. To be honest, if you sort of, as long as you kind of hit the sound and the feel of the movie, it's kind of, then you can just go for it and just be free. It's fantastic. It's just sometimes getting to that point, you know, lots of experimentation, trying to find out what is the key to this score, kind of thing, which I guess anyone goes through. He's fun.
Now, you mentioned your musical background and education. I'm curious about how you saw film scoring at that point. Were you, you know, one of those people that said, I want to be in classical music, and didn't really think about film and TV yet? Or, you know, increasingly we see a lot of people, you know, there's so much media in the world now that more and more people that say, well, you know, I was really inspired by, you know, John Williams themes or whatever it might be, you know, something that Hans was doing or whatever it may be. Where did the kind of film score component of your craft start to become a realization?
Yeah, interesting. Because I was a cellist. Or maybe I played the cello. I wouldn't say I'm a cellist necessarily. Do you see what I mean? Like, there's a distinction there. So when I was, and then I kind of played guitar and was in bands and stuff as well as a sort of teenager in the late teens. And I hadn't honestly thought about writing film music until I got to uni. And I think there was a module on, there's a module on writing to picture. And we had to, it was on VHS back then, if you know what that is, Betamax or something. And I remember, I don't know how I even did it, but yeah, just creating a, I think it was to a scene from Carlito's Way, actually, which is weird because then I ended up working with Patrick Doyle. And we had to sort of rescore it, as it were, which is very common. People do now. It's very easy in the digital era, right? But that was the first time I'd ever thought, oh, this is quite fun. And I remember the lecturer, I don't think he necessarily thought my composition was the best, but he said, Chris, your sync was amazing. Everything hit to like the frame. I was like, yeah. And I did it on VHS, mate. So I'm quite proud of that, you know. I'll take that. So that was the first time. But I mean, as a kid, I was, you know, I loved film. Me and my sister used to watch musical, like Grease. I think I've watched about 300 times. And, you know, between Grease and Back to the Future and Indiana Jones, I think that was my kind of film music upbringing, to be honest. Which is pretty mainstream, I guess, but just such great music in each of those things. So it's kind of cool that I've ended up doing some musicals and some you know, some traditional.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious because a lot of your work, and maybe this is a little bit into what you just described as being bolder, being braver for some musical approach in these projects. But I feel that some of the first credits that I saw of yours, the music felt a little bit more spread across the storytelling, and not as much to, you know, as you mentioned in the Gentleman TV series now, it takes center stage several times and you really, like, it has its own moments, you know, it has its own kind of atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I'm also noticing, and maybe this is in my head, that I'm hearing more melodies, more tunes, more kind of something that's crafted into an interesting little mini journey in the middle of some of these projects. And I wonder, like, what part of your craft those come into play, you know, and whether they're an accent or what, that's something that, you know, is kind of built out with a little bit of a melodic journey that you have planned.
Yeah, melody. Good question. I just think it just depends on what it is, you know. For the first Gentleman film, it just didn't warrant that kind of music, you know. Certainly the TV series is certainly the most melodic thing I've done. And I think obviously there is a kind of trend in film music. It's sort of become less melodic over the last 20 years, 30 years, I'd say. I've certainly witnessed that, you know, working in the genre. And it's become more about shorter figurations or kind of stylistic devices, right? As opposed to big flowing melodies, which we used to associate with film music. So yeah, it's really nice when those things do work and do kind of fit the mood. But they don't always. I think it's not that, I don't think I've consciously thought, oh, I must write more melody. It's just happened. And yeah, I think The Covenant, there are a few more sort of tuneful, soulful moments. Again, it's just what's afforded by the picture, I think.
And it's also...
Yeah, I mean, working with Patrick Doyle, he was just the most melodic person I've ever met. Like, every bar has a melody. It's just amazing.
He's a walking melody himself.
yeah, exactly, yeah. So he just oozes melody, and the same with Alan Menken as well. I remember working with, I can't remember which, whether it was Beauty and the Beast or, I think it was Aladdin. I think I just, I had a, you know, some, a drone or something for 4 bars. And he was like, what's happening there? I was like, oh, it's just, yeah. I'm just waiting for the next cue to start. I was like, no, we need to sort that bit out, which is fantastic. I was like,
can you talk a little bit about just doing a series versus a film? It's interesting as a viewer, it seems like episodic long, you know, these series have become very filmic. It's not the old way of television. It's not just interstitial music in between the house and the garage or whatever. These are, you're able to write film music for television, yeah. But as a composer, as a filmmaker, the stories are able to stretch out longer and you can build more on characters. Do you feel that as a composer? Do you prefer that? Is it easier for you to score a film or a series, being that you there's a lot more to a series, but it's stretched out? I don't know. Like, how does that compare for you?
And especially I know you'll say they're different, but
what do you prefer? They're different, but I've only done one series, so maybe I'm jumping the gun.
Well, how was it for
but
you?
Yeah,
I
absolutely loved it, to be honest, because the idea, the ability to reuse stuff but in a different way was kind of cool. So some of the episodes, I can't remember which episode it is, where we introduce the Belgian character Florian de Groot, and you know that it's the same kind of melody as I'm using for Susie Glass, the kind of who runs the cannabis farm network for her dad. But I kind of did that in a lovely little French style, which I loved. So that was really nice to sort of bend melodies. You know, in the course of a 2-hour film, you might not get the opportunity to go down these little kind of avenues of being able to morph the music into something different was really cool. But also just, I think as great series do, you know, that you need repetition to really make things become, you know, united over the 8 episodes. You know, certainly if we look at Succession or something like that, you know, it's kind of, it's very monothematic, really. No disrespect to it, because I think it's fantastic.
iterations.
I think, different variations and arrangements of, which is kind of what I was doing for some of the later episodes, and then really crafting bespoke pieces for new sort of set pieces. I think that's that was the way to go. But also just coming from it as a music editor was interesting, because my music editor, Christoph, he was great. He would take stems and rebuild cues. And also I'd do that. I'd sort of say, oh, here, let me have a go at this scene. And rather than, you know, going to the keyboard, I would take bits from different cues and kind of create something new from them, which is interesting, because sometimes you will come up there with something that you wouldn't otherwise, which, you know, just kind of bastardizing two things together is quite fun. But yeah, in terms of which I prefer, and I also think Guy sort of saw the first 2 eps as a 2-hour film. So we kind of, once we'd nailed that 2-hour film, as it were, the rest kind of followed suit quite easily with the other directors. So either one.
I'm curious, because you've worked on so many different teams in different roles in this process. What does your team look like now? Now that you've, I mean, on however many, you know, 7 or 8 projects now with Guy, I imagine that things have very much been built to support what you anticipate from his storytelling, and also just kind of like what every film needs. But what is your team made up of? What does kind of your process look like?
Yeah, that's it. It's very minimal. I like to do as much as I can do myself. So even my demos are kind of pretty end producty, and I tend to think of it. It was slightly different on The Gentleman, but for the others, certainly the recording is more overdubbing onto my tracks, like, because I do a lot of cellos and violin myself. So, you know, rather than with a lot of composers I've worked with, you could almost throw away the demo, maybe just keep the percussion track, right? And then you go into scoring, and there is your score. But my, you know, my mixes are very much the mix, you know. And sometimes I think what people do fall foul to, and I've seen it with loads of composers, if you record something, you think you have to keep it. You know, if you record it at the end with orchestral players, but I totally disagree with that. I think if something sounds better, it sounds better. If it's more effective, it's more effective. So it's kind of being brutal at that point. But sorry, yeah, going back to the team. So I kind of do as much as I can. I have a great orchestrator, Giles, who takes my nonsense and somehow makes it kind of meaningful to real players, which is amazing. And he brings a set of skills that, you know, that I don't have. And he's really good at kind of just making it real. And I recently also have an assistant sometimes, Justin, who's amazingly fastidious, because I'm a big fan of file labeling. As a music editor, you have to be, because there's a lot of files involved. Yeah. But he, I think he spotted an error in a file name, and he was a bit like, "Oh, Chris, I didn't want to tell you, but there's an extra underscore before mix." I'm like, "Oh, damn!" Like, I've definitely found the right guy, because he can out fastidious me.
I'm a big fan of file labeling. Is one of my favorite quotes.
Just take that. Just a big fan of a file label. Yeah,
I was wondering about that, because I've worked with a lot of people who there's certain people I've worked with who they just do the one thing really well, and they're really good at delegating and finding people to do stuff. But then when you meet someone who came up differently and they're used to doing everything, it's hard to give up some of that power.
Oh yeah,
to other people. Do you have issues? Like,
yes.
You obviously are working on projects where you could...
Hang on. Are we just talking in general?
You could hire someone on the projects that you're working on now, but I'm wondering if it's hard for you to do that because you know how to do it and you want to do it your way.
Exactly. It is really, really hard. It is so hard. And also because I got really fast at doing the kind of music edit inside of it and the kind of housekeeping... That, you know, I sort of think, oh, it's going to be more difficult to explain this to someone else than it is just to do it. I've tried to start handing stuff over to Justin, which is good. He's amazing. I'm definitely a kind of bit of a control freak, to be honest. I even go to the mix, the final mix, and kind of get involved there if I can. James, Guy's editor, he likes me to come along just to kind of give my penneth, as it were.
Before we let you go, I do want to kind of do something that's unique, because you've worked with so many great composers over your career.
Sure.
We could do like a little rapid fire session, and I just give you a name and you maybe say something that you learned or took from that composer.
Okay, sure.
And if
you mean musically, on like where to go to?
Yeah, just like maybe something that stood out, like in that process, that maybe
didn't have
anything musically to
unless
offer.
It's incriminate. Yeah,
But let's start with Patrick.
They generally did. Just how to be melodic and how to just really, he's just got an amazing sense of drama. So how to highlight something musically?
Clint Mansell.
Oh yeah, Clint, amazing. Just go do something very effective with an economy of means. Don't think everything has to be massive and an orchestral.
Alan Menken.
Do everything massive with a massive orchestral. again, I'd say, Alan's is so good at, modulation. There you go. Alan can kind of modulate and just take things to the places like no one I've ever seen. It just flows out of him. It's insane. And I can't sometimes work out what he's done, which is quite difficult.
Dario Marianelli.
Oh, Dario. Wow. What a composer as well. I'd say this is an amazing thing. He's an amazing piano player. And I think he told me that he had an injury or something, which meant he learned to play in a specific way. So a lot of the arpeggios and stuff he uses are because of a sort of how he learned because of a physical thing, which is quite cool. So,
wow.
But I don't know why I mentioned that. But I think, what would you say for Daria? I think just that the music is key. Do you know what I mean? Like the piece of music is on top of the picture and make it a beautiful piece of music, number one.
And Hans.
Oh, Hans. Hans is amazing at sort of hearing the sound of a film and even distilling it down to, you know, the choice of notes we're going to use. Like, what is the sound? So for Bond, obviously, you have the kind of da 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 da. So, you know, those, that kind of, I mean, it makes sense, but even in cues which are not related to that, let's always have a little flav of that in there. I remember him sort of being big on that.
That's a little Love of that it. Repetition, yeah. I think, probably, yeah. In that that film. You probably yeah. scored a little bit more like a TV series because there's so many Bond, so many iterations of Bond, and the music of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we had more Bond theme in No Time to Die than any of the last, like, 10 films.
Oh, I would believe it, yeah.
Yeah, because I was really liked it.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, we really appreciate your time. I know you're in London. It's nighttime, but it was great to catch up with you and learn about your process and coming cool through background. The ranks yeah. of all the yeah
coming
all
through the
ranks jobs.
Yeah it's, yeah exactly and I think I'd say it doesn't have to be, you know, it can be slightly circuitous route, you know, you can, and people always ask me for advice and my you know, to get into the industry. And I kind of always say, just do anything around music and in music or within film music if you can, if that's what we want to do. But, you know, don't sort of graduate from college or university and say, you know, I'm a composer, let me compose. Because it's not going to happen, generally, is it? Unless you meet a director at college. So I'd just say, yeah, just kind of, and do your time, bide your time and be patient, I think. You know, in the kind of TikTok era, everybody wants instant results of, you know, here's my music, let's be a composer. But yeah, make the tea, as we say. Over
make
here.
The
One
tea,
other thing,
yes.
What musically, for those who haven't yet seen, when we release this episode, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, what musically should people be going into that expecting?
I'm not going to say too much because it's kind of a nice surprise. I can tell you what not to expect, which is, I guess if you think of a World War II film, there's a sound that springs to mind, right? There's a kind of, maybe a kind of orchestral, maybe a trumpet, or a sort of brass, yeah. Especially because it's a sort of an English, British perspective, but it isn't that. It's quite interesting.
Can't wait. It's going to be great.
Looking forward
to
it.
It's a great film. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Well, we're going to wrap things up. A quick reminder to our listeners, you can follow us Instagram and what is it now? TikTok. We just joined TikTok at
You're
Score
ticking
the
and
Podcast.
Talking, brother.
And X is at Score the Podcast. Instagram is at Score Movie and Facebook as well at Score Movie. And you can watch some of these clips and episodes also on our YouTube page, Epiclef Media. And Spotify now has our shows on video, too. So if you're listening on Apple, it's audio only. But if you jump on Spotify, you can watch us talk, which is really riveting to see our heads bobble and bobble.
It's like Diary of a CEO here, isn't it?
But thanks again, Chris, for your time. Best of luck
thanks,
with
chaps.
The release. And
yeah, cool.
Looking forward to more from you, man.
Lovely to meet you guys. You're doing a fantastic job. So, yeah, congrats. Thanks so much for having me.